first half, second half, it's like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best bet, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together.
Holding the high line with Rabbi and Red, talking the rabbits and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are coming to you on the evening of Wednesday, September 4th, 2019. Rabbi Mark Goodman, how was your Labor Day weekend, my friend?
Oh, did I do anything on Labor Day weekend? I don't remember it, so maybe I drank too much. I don't think so. I found a really nice bottle of wine, and I had some friends over, and I didn't like it at first, and then I got really into it, and then I just kept drinking it until I ran out of it, which it's not a very good story, but sometimes you drink because you want to kind of smash the last week into oblivion, and sometimes you drink because, wow, that's just a very tasty, tasty bottle of wine that you're into. I had some friends over. I cooked a lot of things. My favorite thing was I always, when I cook, I make one or two dishes that I know how to make really well and I can like rely on. And I make one or two dishes that I've never made before just to see what happens. This time I made like a total of 5 dishes and like, Matt, all of them came out amazing. Like everything came out great, which was pretty weird because you got like the backup, you know, like, I don't know if it's going to turn out and it all works out really well. So I may have made the finest meal I have ever cooked in my entire life this weekend.
All right, fantastic. I was in the upper part of the Lower Peninsula of Michigan, so that's the Mitten for those of you non-geography fans, visiting some family members. So I was lucky enough, Mark, to be outside any of the MLS markets that, with the exception of the national team games, I could watch every single game on ESPN+. A little bit more fortunate than most Rapids fans in Colorado, as we'll get to in a little bit. I've got a question for you, Mark, my usual pleb perspective on Judaism. So the upper part of the Lower Peninsula of Michigan is very, very famous for its fish fries. Cod is a very big deal, as is any perch and whitefish that you catch from Lake Michigan and then also Lake Huron that connects to it. There's a rumor that hasn't really been substantiated that culture was part of the inspiration for the McDonald's Filet-O-Fish. Mark, are you familiar with the Chick-fil-A versus Popeye's chicken sandwich debate that has been going on in this country recently?
Guys, I may keep kosher, but I'm not dead. I am aware. I am aware there's a, by the way, during this chicken thing, I've been going out of just a desire to like participate. I've been going and getting the Morningstar Farms vegetarian chicken patties, and I've been making those like a couple times a week, and I've been experimenting with various different hot sauces on there. But like, let's be honest, I know exactly what I'm doing. I'm eating fake chicken soy, you know, with sriracha, and trying to imagine what it's like to be the rest of you who are going out to Popeyes and having the good stuff. So what's the connection with cod, Matt?
Well, I mean, nothing. I was just thinking that as far as like cultural phenomenon and everything, just because, you know, it was Friday fish fries that you have in the area because it's the, you know, local easy thing to catch. It's always super fresh. And then the area, for the most part, kind of depends on which town you're in, is obviously a very healthy, Catholic environment. So especially when you've got, you know, during the Lent period and throughout the whole of the country, you know, you have the, you know, don't mix the calf with the milk of its mother, if I'm not mistaken. So obviously fish is the alternative, but I could not remember how chicken may be involved in that, and whether or not, because chicken itself doesn't produce any other dairy products other than eggs, I assume, you know, are you allowed to have a chicken, you know, a fried chicken sandwich with cheese, or where would like a chicken sandwich with like an egg on top fall in the kosher paradigm?
Wow, that's a lot of, you just speedballed all of the dietary rules of Judaism into like one question, because you mix fish, milk, meat, chicken, and egg all into like one question. So
and I guess dairy with the cheese as well. So then cheese mixed in with any and all of those,
cheese
even though
cheese.
You know, even
cheese
though chicken and fish do not produce cheese. If they do, I'm going to assume it's not very good or it's not been mass produced, you know, on the level to the point where they're, you know, the dungeons of Sporting Kansas City's training ground has, you know, catacombs of government cheese.
Wow, that was bizarre, but I like where it went because it made no sense.
We're
it
was so off the rails Python already, Mark. We haven't even gotten to the soccer stuff.
It's a Monty Python-esque moment. So I'm just going to take your question as quickly as possible for the four listeners who haven't clicked the skip ahead 30 seconds button on the phone to wait till we get to actual Rapids news. So really simply, kosher law, based on a bunch of verses in the Bibles, falls into multiple sections. Section 1 deals with don't see the calf in its mother's milk. Section 2 deals with not eating anything with fins and scales. And section 3 deals with what animals you're allowed to eat. They have to be able to chew their cud and have a split hoof. So that's basically cows, but not horses and pigs. So real quick, the rule about chicken and cheese was a later rabbinic addition because basically the rabbis understood that if you're at your backyard barbecue and Dave is just throwing all kinds of various sundry meats on the grill and is like, you know, he's got some chicken, he's got some beef, he's just going to town, and somebody, you know, and some rabbi screams out like, yo, Dave, throw some cheese on my chicken. And he really char-grills it real good. He may mix up the cheese and the chicken with the cheese and the beef. And the rabbis declared that you can't have chicken with cheese. So that's that. Egg, on the other hand, doesn't fall under the rule. So even though you could make the argument that a calf, it's like one of those analogies from the old SAT before you were born, Matt. Which is a calf is to the milk of its mother as a chicken is to an egg. That analogy might logically work, but the rabbis didn't believe in it. So you can eat a fried egg right on top of a piece of chicken and you are good to go. Once you put cheese on top of it, though, you're in deep trouble.
Alrighty then. Okay. Let's get into the actual news of the week, Mark. And, you know, we'll get to the Colorado Rapids winning their first game of the Robin Fraser era against New York Red Bulls in a little bit. But I think one thing that we definitely have to address,
he's
Mark.
He's 1-0.
Yeah.
He's undefeated.
Yes. He's 1-0 and he's undefeated. And this might be news to some of you folks because a lot of you might not have been able to watch the Rapids win over the New York Red Bulls because Dish, Comcast Xfinity, and DirecTV, individually or collectively, are having a feud with Altitude Sports over carrying Altitude Sports on their network as a renewal of their contracts that they had held for the first 15 years of Altitude Sports in its existence. As previously stated, I was in Michigan. I am a Comcast Xfinity customer, for the record, folks. So I know that Dish and DirecTV had cut off Altitude by the time of the pregame show for the Rapids on Saturday. Mark, I have been unable to confirm whether or not Comcast had cut out at that point, but I know for a fact that they have cut out as well. So as of right now, folks, Dish, Comcast, and DirecTV, whichever one that you have, if we were to go on and go to the normal channel that Altitude Sports would be on, you'll get, you know, a blank screen with a little notification saying that the channel isn't available for your subscription anymore, or whatever the equivalent error is there. There were some folks that I saw, Mark, during the game on Saturday who were able to confirm that if you went to the Altitude Sports website and there was a certain link or a section or a drop-down you had to go to for streaming the game with Richard Fleming and Cello and Marcella Balboa, that you were able to put in your login credentials for whichever one of those providers that you had and were able to watch the stream of the game. But this is something that's continued to plague these networks. This is something that Altitude Sports has come out and said that, you know, has come out and made statements on, that KSE employees have come out and made statements on. It's a very he said, she said situation, Mark, where kind of Altitude Sports and KSE are kind of accusing the networks of ganging up on them and having billions and billions of dollars and everything, but not being able to, negotiate in good faith with Altitude Sports, and similarly have, you know, continued to raise their prices, continue to increase their profits and their costs to the customers, but now in providing a less good service in one fewer channel, and a channel that people here in the 303 area very much care about, whether it's Rapids related or, you know, the upcoming you know, Denver Nuggets and Colorado Avalanche, who will be getting their preseasons, later this month, don't have available to them right now and are still being expected to pay the exact same costs. So there's a lot of, it's kind of unclear because nobody's in the room where it's happening to know who's not arguing, you know, who's not negotiating in good faith, who's trying to, you know, shaft the other side. And, you know, are we just going to be in a standoff until somebody ends up leaking? And, you know, all of this in the context of, you know, a rapid season that people aren't going to be able to watch as things are getting exciting with what Robin Fraser is doing, the impacts on some of the other local sports teams that fans really care about. And certainly from a personal level, you and me, Mark, with all the wonderful exchanges that we've had with Richard Fleming. Richard Fleming had a pretty cryptic tweet earlier in the week, effectively saying that, you know, his potential staying with the club is in doubt should the network not figure things out. Mark, talk me through some of the details that are going here. How do you understand all these, you know, how do you understand what's going on? And do we have any understanding of precedent as to how this thing could shake out given, you know, there's a really funny episode of South Park, folks, that, you know, basically makes fun of all of these cable network companies of just being the absolute scum of the earth and taking advantage of you. And I won't reference some of the other stuff in the episode, but I mean, you know, these are two entities that largely, you know, operate in a space where fans don't have a whole lot of empathy for them, given what they do normally to their customers to separate you from your money.
Yeah, I think any attempt on a short podcast that's not actually a television business and cable economics podcast to simplify this is probably going to be woefully.
We'd have to do like an hour and 30 minutes with Freakonomics in order to fully break this down.
Yeah, but I mean, the simple thing is this, like I wrote an article for Soccer Rabbi about it. You know, you pay money to your cable company. Your cable company takes, you know, your $79 a month and splits that money. They take, you know, $20 off the top, and then they take the other $59 and they split it up with the 200 channels that you subscribe to, right? The most popular channels that everybody absolutely demands in their package get the largest chunk of that money. So, you know, looking it up, it turns out that ESPN, if you pay $79 to your cable company, they get $7 out of that, which is the largest of any company. There's a couple other, you know, big channels that get that kind of money. Discovery does really well because everybody wants it.
I assume the big players, so the CBSs, ABCs, Foxes, NBCs, etc.
If I'm not mistaken, they don't get a lot because they broadcast over air. And so because they broadcast over air, they probably charge the cable companies an absolutely nominal fee to cover them, because the cable companies know that most subscribers would get it for free anyways. Remember that they're making their money on advertisements predominantly. Mm-hmm. The cable company doesn't matter. And then you get – the Rapids are an interesting thing because they're regional and because they're a niche. So they actually – and this I did not know till today. When I wrote the article, they hadn't disclosed this. Matt Hutchins, the president of Altitude Sports, laid out the math real simple. He said that Altitude takes $8 of every cable bill. The cable company like Comcast takes $8 for Altitude from every subscriber, but they only keep half of that themselves. And only $4 actually goes back to Altitude. So by comparison to, ESPN, which gets $7, that's actually pretty decent considering the Tennis Channel gets 15 cents. But that being said, the Tennis Channel is carried to every single person who signs up for Comcast in the United States. So it goes out to like 80 million people.
Yeah. Whereas Altitude is Colorado specific, some parts of Kansas. So it only goes out to like millions. Yeah. There's a, I get pretty regularly from Sporting Kansas City fans either tweeting and showing up on my mentions or in my notifications or just on my timeline that there's one really, really niche, cable provider in the Kansas City area that offers Altitude. That is why if you're on the KCK side of the border, you cannot watch the Rapids via ESPN Plus, but for other than Colorado and Kansas City, and then I guess maybe some New Mexico United fans, you're talking every single other market from RSL East and from RSL West, and then pretty much everybody west of Kansas City, every single other MLS market that wants to watch the Rapids or their team against the Rapids gets it via ESPN Plus, if not their local cable provider that's covering the game remotely as well.
So here's the complicated thing, or the questionable thing. It sounds like that Altitude is claiming that they're roughly looking at somewhere between a 30 to 50% decline in income. And they're crying about that and saying, I don't know that we can make this, that this makes sense for us, it's not profitable, yada, yada, yada. The challenging part of that, of course, is twofold. One is, they sell advertisements, so they already, that might be a significant portion of where they make that up. But two, everybody knows that Altitude, the Nuggets, the Avs, the Rapids, Kroenke Sports Entertainment are all the same entity. So, it's hard to say whether it's a good question whether Altitude needs to make money outright on its own, or whether it's really a promotional arm for those other three teams. But the long-winded thing that if you really want to dive into, check out my article on Soccer Rabbi, is the question of what are their options? Like, what can they do? And the options are basically really quick. Take the deal because there's nothing better and there's nothing else they can do but just deal with these three teams on three cable companies on their own terms. They can call their bluff and start a streaming service and basically say, fine, if Disney Plus and ESPN Plus are going to have, no cable box streaming options, then we're going to do that. And you can watch the Rapids, the Nuggets, and the Avs on your computer or on your smart TV, and you don't even need a stupid cable package. So there. Option three is to sell out. There are not that many local regional sports networks left. Most of them are national. There are three big juggernauts who run the whole show, which is AT&T, NBC Sports, and Fox Sports, which has actually been spun off and is part of Sinclair. But that's another matter. And then the last option is for Altitude to say, you know what, we don't really need to exist. Like, we can just close shop, and each of these three teams can sell their broadcast rights to, the CW or to the local, NBC affiliate like the Broncos do. There's lots of different options, and I think all of them, here's the really important thing. There's no way that you won't be able to watch the Rapids on television in 2020. That you should not worry about. Whether Altitude can figure out a way to either stay in the black or be profitable, or whether Rapids fans will have affordable access to the team, or, and this is pretty important, whether your average, kind of very lackadaisical sports fan will be able to flip on the TV and just see a soccer game and be like, huh, I wonder what this is a big question. Like, we don't know whether the next iteration of Altitude will expand the options and expand the viewership of soccer in Colorado, or whether it will be a niche that very few people like, pay-per-view boxing. Like, I don't ever pay $60 to watch a boxing match. Some people may feel that way about the Rapids. They'll pay $60 just to watch the Rapids next year. That's how English Premier League works with some of your favorite teams. Some of the smaller leagues out there, you have to pay a bunch through the nose to get a stream. Maybe that's the way the Rapids are going, or maybe the Rapids are just going to be on a local television station, you know, 12 times a year, and you'll have to stream the rest of the games. We don't know.
Yeah, no, a bunch of really good points there, Mark. I think the thing that maybe I'm most concerned about in the dominoes following there, you know, going back to, you know, Richard Fleming kind, you know, alluding to his job security might be in doubt. And I mean, you know, I have no doubt with his resume that Fleming could move back to London, for example, and whether it's Arsenal TV or something with his home club or Chelsea, like, he's going to be fine financially. He could get a job doing something with some Premier League team on a media television broadcast front, probably, you know, immediately, if not certainly within the calendar year. You know, if he were to spontaneous, I would totally be fine with him taking over for Gentleman George if he were to retire and taking over the team streams that Fulham TV puts out, for example. But I guess the one thing, you know, we've maligned KSC for its you know, sort of its umbrella control of the Rapids and kind of the lumping together that the Rapids and, you know, to a certain extent, the Nuggets and the Avalanche. And we won't, you know, go down what's everything that's been going on with Arsenal, going back to, you know, the letter that came out, the fan letter that came out right before the friendly that Arsenal played here. But the one thing that you had with that, Mark, is that with Arsenal TV or Arsenal TV with Altitude TV and Altitude Sports being under the KSC umbrella, it was something that the club on some level had control of. So in that, you had a good situation with Marcelo Balboa being comfortable and being able to care about the club and everything. And, you know, I see these situations. You kind of saw it, you know, with the USL streams moving from being free on being streamed on YouTube Live for free to moving over to ESPN Plus, that then ESPN took over for that. So there are a lot of markets, I can't speak to Pittsburgh personally, Mark, where you went from having a local TV crew and everything that was in the stadium, that was at training every single day, that was familiar with the team, you know, catering a little bit more towards the local market, but still able to speak about the whole of the league. And now you've got a lot of those broadcasts that USL is doing on ESPN Plus that are two or three guys in a booth together. They're doing four or five games throughout the entire weekend, potentially, and then you just don't have that same level of coverage. There's not a lot of local familiarity with it. Sometimes they mix things up. Sometimes just the production on a whole, because it's not local or it's not ones that are familiar with that setup or anything, is inconsistent and sometimes, you know, extremely poor quality. So if nothing else, it's something that internally KSC has control over and they can have, and there's a certain level of consistency. And fans, you can tweet at us whether or not you're content with what Altitude Sports does, you know, from a Rapid standpoint, independent of what Richard Ancelo and Jordan Angeli and, you know, Connor Cape are doing. And, you know, if you want to tweet at us anger about all the production stuff that they're doing with, you know, Vic Lombardi and Let's Talk Sports, that's fine as well. But it's something they have control over on some extent. And so when you subcontract that out effectively to another entity, they're making a lot of the production decisions, they're making a lot of the personnel decisions, and maybe they don't have hardcore soccer people who are covering the Rapids regularly and producing all of that content. Maybe it's somebody who's, you know, got their hands in a bunch of different pots, to where then they're maybe just a general sportscaster, like you see with maybe a Chris Fowler or some of the other ESPN people, or even, you know, Mike Tirico, who, you know, would be busy, you know, 90% of the weekends out of the year, and he's calling a whole bunch of different stuff, and he's, you know, he's experienced enough that he could do an NFL game on, you know, the Sunday and then do an NBA game in the midweek and then also mix in together a college football or a college basketball game as well. But there isn't as much, you know, overlap for a general sports broadcaster and being knowledgeable about soccer. And in particular, if some of these teams are, you know, with Denver being a localized market but not an interesting national market, you know, would that be subcontracted out to a bigger entity where maybe that staff and that personnel are producing everything remotely? So then you just get a less personalized product and people who are more generally sports focused in general, as opposed to being soccer specific people, where Richard Fleming moved from London covering Arsenal to cover the Rapids. He is at training almost every single day. 90% of the times I've gone out to training for Field 20, he's there. He's familiar with these players. He hears random little stories of something that happened in training or that a coach mentioned, and he's able to incorporate that into his broadcast stuff, where you see some of these more nationally focused people, they don't have a lot of those tidbits. It's dependent on a very, very good field reporter who's just getting stuff as it's actually happening in order to cover that stuff, or they're just covering generally, you know, what the fans think. So one thing that they'll often say, Mark, for example, for the ESPN Plus game for the championship that I've watched a couple Fulham games, for example, it's more of a generalist. It's usually a guy who's generally covering English football throughout all of the different tiers, but if it's not a team that he's covering in person or he hasn't had a couple days to prep for it, they do a lot of the stuff for the broadcast for the Friday night games, for example. It's normally very generalized focus, and it's basically like you can tell that the guy's main homework that he did was just reading a couple of the tabloidy stuff to see what the week in the news for the two clubs is, and then basically just searching whatever the club hashtag is and then what fans are generally talking about. And that has to a certain extent some value, but I think it means a little bit more when Richard Fleming and Marcelo Balboa are at training every single day, and you know, Cello can remember something that he randomly saw from Cole Bassett 3 years ago in an academy game to point out some nuanced fact of something that Cole Bassett did or that the team was working on, being a former player, being a former Rapids player. And Fleming, you know, maybe he remembers something that Robin Fraser said that, oh, this comes out in the game and I can bring that out. All those little nuanced things, all those nice little details that give a, you know, a Ma and Pa club aspect to what those people do in covering the Rapids, that could potentially be gone. And on top of all of that, in addition to their livelihoods potentially, Richard Fleming potentially leaving the American soccer landscape, potentially nothing being available for the Rapids, potentially having to add something else to your cable package, having to adjust something if you're cord cutting, just leaves a lot of uncertainty and for me a lot of doubt. Say what you will about KSC, say what you will about the production value of some of the stuff that they're doing, and you know, whether or not any of the behind the scenes stuff or the fact that the Rapids, you know, have to interrupt a fishing show, for example. At the end of the day, watching a game, an away game, knowing that Richard Fleming and Marcelo Balboa are on the call, I know I'm going to get an informed broadcast. I'm going to get one that is going to help me in my own coverage, and one of two people who care about the team, who care about the product that they're putting on the field, not a bunch of overworked guys who are doing nationally stuff. It's like, I have to cover this soccer game. You know, let's just do this remotely, and then let me focus on the NFL game that I'm calling on the Sunday, and all that stuff in doubt, I think, you know, has a pretty significant cloud on top of the fact that this could severely hurt fans watching these last six games for the Rapids. That could include, you know, some very significant stuff going on with Robin Fraser that could bring extreme wonderful momentum to the club in 2020, and that's potentially not available because billion-dollar companies are playing hardball over a couple bucks a month for people that are already paying out the nose for a cable package.
I'll just add one last thing, Matt, which is that there's a bigger picture here, which is a little bit, if you really want to get like doomsday scenario, it's the question of whether – so the Rapids lose money. Like that's not a debated figure. I mean, as long as you believe Forbes, it's a little bit more complicated when you take the understanding that the Rapids are part of an advertising kind of pitch that with altitude that goes to also Nuggets and Avs fans, that like when you're, you know, selling a Toyota ad, you're getting it on all three broadcasts of all three games. But the question becomes, if altitude can't make money with its cable package or with a streaming service. And, you know, potentially I think the Avs and the Nuggets are going to be at least close to in the black. The Rapids are going to be in the red no matter what, because they pretty much always have. Mm-hmm. But if they start to really be a drain on the KSC budget, and it doesn't seem like the franchise value is appreciating at a significant rate, we get into the position which I think when you're talking doomsday, I've talked about before of, Kroenke looking at the Rapids and wondering, is this really a good bet? Would it be better to offload this asset? Because they're not getting enough profit on, cable. They're generally turning a net loss every year, and it's not making up it's not being made up for in the value of the franchise going up every year. So that's, I think, the bigger worry. I don't know that for a lot of Rapids fans, the idea of Kroenke selling the Rapids is something that they boohoo about. I think, you know, if you've seen the last couple owners that have come into the league, most of us think that Kroenke, it would be easy to find a better owner than Kroenke. The worry, of course, is whether
you get into a save the crew situation,
whether the next owner wants to keep them in Colorado. So that's where I think that that's the most dramatic, worst possible scenario, that like the Rapids cannot figure out a way to make a television profit. And so they can't make a profit altogether, and they can't stay. And KSC doesn't want to own them anymore. But it's a real thing that we do need to consider.
Well said, Mark. Shall we get on to the actual soccer ring on the field?
Let's talk about soccer.
Soccer's all right. Listeners, this past Saturday at Red Bull Arena, for the first time ever, the Colorado Rapids were victorious against the New York Red Bulls by a score of 2-0. A brace for Jonathan Lewis, first unassisted in the 14th minute off a counterattack against the run of play, with the Red Bulls having a very, very good start to the game. And then nearly at the death with another great counterattack, I believe 3v3 in terms of total number of defenders. And then ultimately, Diego Rubio finds Jonathan Lewis at the top of the box for a curler that Luis Robles, goalkeeper and captain for the New York Red Bulls, just watched sail over him because he knew he absolutely could not get to it. A fairly back and forth game, Mark, a defensive game overall for the Rapids, but you know, I'll highlight a couple things that I thought Robin Fraser kind of alluded to, you know, in the week prior with media availability that they implemented from a phase of play standpoint. You had BWP hitting the post off of a second chance off a set piece just prior to the Jonathan Lewis goal. You had Robles with a couple really good stops, including on a breakaway from Cole Bassett that I think Cole probably could have chipped Robles, but you know, Robles is one of the best goalkeepers in MLS, so not surprised by that. Lewis had a couple of other really good opportunities. You could argue maybe he could add a hat trick, but two fantastic finishes for the brace. I'm not really complaining. Sims, a new young DP from the New York Red Bulls, had a couple really good chances, but you know, if I'm pulling out a bunch of old school Pablo Mastroeni talking points, Mark, the New York Red Bulls had a lot of possession. Not a lot of it was possession with a purpose, and at the end of the day, in terms of really good quality chances, the Rapids had not a lot of good chance, had not a lot of chances in terms of number, but had really high quality chances. So going back to X goals, would you rather have the one opportunity that's like a 99% chance of being a goal, or would you rather have 10 opportunities that are, you know, slightly under 10%? The Red Bulls had a lot of volume, they did not have a lot of high quality chances, and ultimately the Rapids finished those chances and were able to manage the result. They get their first win ever at Red Bull Arena. Tim Howard, presumably in his last game ever against the club he started with, granted they were the New York Metro Stars in the early 1990s, gets a win in his home state in New Jersey, and Robin Fraser gets a win in his first game back against Chris Armas, one of his old U.S. national team teammates, and against his former club where he was an assistant head coach. Mark, what was your good thing from this past Saturday's first win of the Robin Fraser era in burgundy and blue?
Jonathan Lewis looked absolutely unchained. I mean, just off the hook, just completely let to do his thing. He really was allowed to dribble his man, to play him wide, to play him narrow, to cause problems. And I think that it was a great opportunity for him to shine. The question with a player like him, a mercurial forward/winger, is it something he can repeat? And I think it was a really interesting gambit. This lineup, as you alluded to, Matt, was really, really interesting, really strange. One reason that you had this lineup was because you didn't have the option of Kai Kamara up top. Mm-hmm. And that's why Robin Fraser either had to or chose to go with Lewis and Rubio up top. That gives you two speedy, dribbly players. Then he chose to do something that I would never have expected, which is to go 5-3-2, to play with width and to play with youth on the wings, to go with Vines and Anderson on the outside. It all worked. I don't exactly know how. It worked because of the counter. And it worked because Jonathan Lewis was able, they were able to move the ball up to Lewis really quickly on the counterattack. and he was able to do things. They also, you know, defended pretty well, which they were compact in the middle. They caused problems. They stayed even. I think that's a thing that I love to see out on a soccer field is watching everybody fill their spot perfectly so that they move as a unit. I thought that they did that pretty well. So mostly my good thing is Jonathan Lewis, but I can't help but notice that this team in its first week with a brand new manager seems to react really well. Now, what was your good thing?
I'm going to go back to a couple of things that Robin Fraser said in some of his media availability last week. And then I'm going to go back to, you know, the Old Testament of this team as it's trying to be constructed under the Rapids way, which is, you know, the Denver Post op-ed from Pork Smith going back, you know, 2 years and change. We want to be a high intensity team that's willing to take calculated risks in the right area of the field, but all while maintaining a defensive discipline that is part and parcel with who we are and always has been. I'm going to invoke something that I thought was that, you know, in three or four weeks ago, I would have thought was absolutely insane, Mark. I feel like this team on Saturday was what Anthony Hudson was trying to make this team be in 2018. A 3-5-2 with aggressive wingbacks, a three-man kind of triangle-ish midfield with a committed six in the form of Jack Price, who could add to be an extra defender to put four in the back with the three center backs. A mobile center backs between Wilson, Smith, and Rosenberry, who is a little bit out of position but did okay. And then dual eights in the middle, in front of the six, and then floaty channel challenging forwards in the form of Diego Rubio, who is floating and doing a bunch of stuff, and, you know, Lewis, who was, you know, very much more direct in the, Dominic Baggi mold. Like, this was a team that looked like, you know, if Anthony Hudson said, this is where I want to be June 1st of my first year with the Rapids, I don't think you could do any better in terms of personnel, individual roles, and understanding of what they were supposed to do an execution than what the Rapids did against the New York Red Bulls, as crazy as it was. This was a team that focused on defense first. They were able to drop back. They had numbers in the back that were able to frustrate the New York Red Bulls. They made the Red Bulls play their game because they said, we're going to focus on that defensive structure. We are going to maintain that defensive discipline that was part and parcel with who we are and always has been, but is still going to take calculated risks and is going to take risks to the extent that they benefit you offensively. That Robin Fraser talked about, all while not losing anything from their defensive structure, and they did that to a T. The New York Red Bulls like to play a pressing style. They did not let the Red Bulls press them. They told them to, they let them have the ball. They frustrated them. They had a lot of possession, not a lot of possession with a purpose. They took calculated risks that led to low volume, but high quality offensive chances. And they ultimately buried them and then were able to manage the result and see the result out. Going back to the Pablo versus Pep scale, Pablo Mascherini was consistently a 2 out of 3. This was a Rapids team, Mark, that for me was a solid 4 and extremely effective 4. This was a pragmatic team that went on the road in out of conference play that did something that I think first year head coach Greg Vanney with Toronto FC would have been extremely proud of, that you would think would have been part and parcel with a playoff level Columbus Crew team with Greg Berhalter. If this is any indication of what the Rapids are going to be under Robin Fraser, I am extremely excited to see what this team does to absolutely frustrate teams that like to play with possession at home, and then in particular what they're able to do with the talent they have in the attack right now on the counterattack. And it was extremely encouraging for me to see, even just in the first week of this team being together, an understanding, some level of a systematic approach to what they were doing offensively, and players executing from front to back, Tim Howard all the way up to Jonathan Lewis with the brace. With that, Mark, where do you want to start with bad thing? Any big things stand out for you?
I don't think there's anything you could, personally, I don't think you could say anything bad about going to Red Bull Arena and getting a 2-0 win on the road. It's just, there were definitely spells where it was kind of dire, and they definitely didn't really want to possess the ball very much, and they definitely played a fairly typical non-possession counterattacking game in which there's a lot of opportunities where the goalkeeper's just going to punt it long, or they're going to play it over the top and hope that something happens. But, you know, that's a pretty minor quibble considering that they emerged with a 2-0 win. You?
I mean, I'm wondering with Robin Fraser if maybe he's got a few more wrinkles or stuff that he wants to incorporate. But I mean, if he's set on the 3-5-2, the 5-3-2, kind of similar to what Anthony Hudson was working, but more in the vein of, say, what Greg Vanney had, you know, I'll say with the first MLS Cup run, with Toronto FC, I'm just kind of worried about some of the positional issues there. You know, Keegan Rosenberry, you know, if he's the third center back on a back three, I think that he's okay, but he's kind of caught in the nether regions there, Mark, where I'm not sure that he's a center back in a back three as much as he is a right back in a back four, and I'm not sure how I feel about him in an advanced focused wing back position. I love the idea of, you know, throwing out Vines and Anderson in that roles and seeing what they can do, but, you know, at the same time, if you're committing that, you know, it's going to be a wing back is your only real wide players, then, you know, I wonder is, you know, I think at one point, I think Anderson subbed out. There was some point in the game, I think when Mesquita came in, that Mesquita played centrally and then, Sam Nicholson went a little bit out wide. I'm just wondering, you know, we've talked a lot about those four wing players, you know, Lewis and Nicholson and then to a lesser extent, not Mesquita, who am I thinking of? Diego Rubio Times and then Andre Shinyashiki, whether or not just having your only wide players be wingbacks, if maybe that's gonna force some of the other attacking players, you know, who are frenetic when it's those four on the field, certainly with a Kai Kamara up top, in order to fit into another role. And maybe that's Jonathan Lewis being an underneath striker, and maybe there's a question of whether it's him or Diego Rubio playing up top with Kai. Does Sam Nicholson have to play a little bit more centrally? He did that at times at Hearts, but I think the best that he ever was at Hearts when he was with Minnesota and certainly with Colorado is in that wide role. I'm kind of just wondering if maybe Robin Fraser's feeling things out to experiment, and maybe we find out, you know, 5 or 6 games into some of this experimenting that, you know, Keegan Rosenberry just isn't going to cut it as a right center back in a back three, for example. And we kind of saw that when Hudson was experimenting with the formation, and we kind of realized that, yeah, Axel wasn't really going to work in that three-man back line. So I'm kind of just wondering how this team was built in the offseason under one manager and one system. Granted, it was still the Diamond at that time in name only. If maybe Robin Fraser is experimenting with a couple things, and maybe with just automatically what he's planning to do tactically, that there's some players that just are going to have to, you know, maybe be a square peg that molds into a round peg, or maybe just don't have a well-defined role that suits them, and maybe they become a tradable asset that maybe benefits the team. But, you know, I know there's a lot of fans out there who I think would be really sad if Sam Nicholson had to leave, or if Jonathan Lewis had to leave, or, you know, we just don't see as much Andre Shinyashiki because he's competing with Kai Rubio.
Great.
All right. Big thing. Any other things that we want to talk about, Mark? Anything that we missed?
I think you made a lot of really interesting points. I think my big thing is a response to your bad thing, which is roughly to say, let's not overread into Robin Fraser's one and only game with the Rapids. We saw a lot of interesting things. We hope that he can repeat some of the successes. I think what you said about Fraser taking what Hudson tried to do with the 5-3-2 last year and actually doing it and doing it successfully is really interesting. But it's really hard to tell whether this wasn't just experimentation or whether this was really like Robin Fraser stamping his kind of sensibility on the game. Because I also think the way that he played the 5-3-2 was very different. Okay. So not enough data points, more information needed. It's going to be exciting to watch the last 6 games and hopefully figure out what it all means.
Yeah, well said, Mark. You know, this could all just be the new coach bump, folks. You know, we talked a lot about that when the Rapids, you know, got off to a really good start with interim head coach Connor Casey. So maybe this is all the new coach bump. And, you know, maybe this is Tommy Smith realizing that, you know, if I don't prove that I deserve that contract renewal, you know, I'm looking at taking a pay cut in League One next year and having to move back to England with my wife. So this could be a new coach bump in terms of players just hearing a different voice than a good voice. voice, maybe one that's a little bit more nuanced and level-headed, you know, maybe a nice in-between between what Hudson was trying to do and failed and what Connor Casey was able to do and was effective at times. And maybe this is all just guys realizing there's a new manager, he's taking stock of everybody, every chance I play, I have to play well because I want a job next year, and either I'm auditioning to stay with the Rapids or I'm auditioning to add some highlight reel tape for somebody else to pick me up. So I agree with you. Definitely, you know, pump the brakes on any hot takes that you have on this team whatsoever, folks. You know, maybe just the one thing that I'll add, Mark, I think with this result, we can officially put to bed who's winning the wooden spoon in 2019. FC Cincinnati lost over the weekend. They're still sitting on 18 points. It's been a while since they got a result. So Vancouver Whitecaps have 27 points and the Rapids have 30. So, the Rapids and Cincinnati are both on 28 games played, so they've got 6 games left, and FCC is behind by a total of 12 points, Mark, which means just to catch the Rapids, they need to win 4 out of their next 6, and they need to get another result in those other 2 games, and that pretty much requires the Rapids to lose out or get, like, one draw. Cincinnati got a draw on August 10th against Columbus. Their last win was July 13th at Chicago. Their final 6 games are as follows, Mark. This coming weekend, they're hosting Toronto FC, then they're at Montreal Impact, hosting Atlanta, hosting Chicago, hosting Orlando, and at DC United, all 6 of those games against Eastern Conference opponents, and pending in about a month or so, maybe Chicago and Orlando are all going to be against teams that will be fighting for something as far as either playoff hopes, playoff seedings, or Atlanta certainly wanting that number one overall spot in the Eastern Conference. They've got to get 4 wins out of, they got to get 4 wins out of those 6 games, Mark. I'm not sure that I see 2 wins. You can make a solid argument there's not more than 4 points in those 6 games. So, you know, the Rapids are kind of in that nice nether region where, you know, where Robin Fraser can do pretty much all experimentation, because even if they completely run the table and win everything, every game left, they're probably not making the playoffs, and they're comfortably outside of the wooden spoon race as well. So they're kind of, you know, they're that team that with maybe a month to go in the Premier League season, you know, is sitting in like 13th place with like 11 points ahead of that last spot in the relegation battle, where they can just experiment or play some young players or, you know, rest some guys who maybe had some injuries and not really have to worry because they've got no chance at Europa League. The fans don't really care about them finishing in the top half of the table, and they're definitely not going down.
Yeah.
All right, listeners, this coming Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, the Colorado Rapids will be playing their rescheduled Bomb Cyclone, canceled game against the Seattle Sounders. And then this coming Wednesday, they'll be taking on the Los Angeles Galaxy with hopefully our first and maybe our last and only time, Mark, that, listeners will be able to see Zlatan Ibrahimovic, at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. Seattle Sounders currently second in the Western Conference. They have 46 points off of 28 games played. They have a record of 13-8-7 with a +3 goal differential and a road record of 4-6-4. LA Galaxy currently in the last spot in the Western Conference, Mark, 7th. They have 42 points off of 28 games played. 13-12-3 is their record. They have a -4 goal differential, unfortunately for them. And they have a 2019 road record in league play of 4-8-2. These two teams played this past weekend, Mark, in an absolutely thrilling 4-3 victory for the Seattle Sounders that saw Christian Roldan get a brace and score a goal, I believe, in the 89th minute to ultimately win it for the Sounders. Meanwhile, the Colorado Rapids currently in 11th place in the Western Conference. They have 30 points off of 28 games played, a record of 14-6. With those 28 games, Mark, we are 28-34 through the 2019 Colorado Rapids season. That reduces down to 14-17. They have a -9 goal differential and a home record at DSG of 6-6-2. These are two teams, Mark, who are desperately in need of points, who are still fighting for their playoff hopes. These are two teams who have gotten mixed results at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, and these are two teams who will be a little bit shorthanded from a international call-up standpoint. Uriel Antuna and Jonathan Dos Santos will be away with Mexico, Mark, but there's pretty much an understanding from Tata Martino that they're not going to be playing a whole lot in that second game that Mexico has played, so presumably they'll be fresh and traveling directly to Colorado, and I'll let you, you know, run the gamut of, you know, a pretty solid first 11, if you ask me, as far as the players who will be unavailable for the Seattle Sounders. Walk me through these two games, Mark, what these two teams are going to try and do, and what we could see from the Rapids in Robin Fraser game 2 and 3.
Yeah, it's a good question. So it's hard to figure out whether the Sounders are going to have enough players to have enough players to play this game, but the quality is going to be quite variable. The starting lineup is going to be full of guys who haven't gotten a lot of run, and some names that I'm just absolutely not familiar with. So let's start with who is here, who has experience and will be, you can comfortably rely on if you're a Sounders fan. So, the Sounders have Nico Lodero, they have Will Bruin, they have Harry Shipp, Kim Keehee, Roman Torres, and Stefan Fry. So that's a nice little rundown of, about six regular players who will be just fine to slot in. You also have Kelvin Leerdam, who can play really on either wing, particularly he's a right back. And then after that, the depth falls off significantly to a whole bunch of guys who haven't played a whole lot of soccer this season, at all. So you get, Campbell.
Yes.
Defender Campbell. You get Saad Abdul Salam. You've got Alex, don't call me Christian, Roldan, the younger brother, since Christian is away,
with the USP.
And then you've got, a couple other players that, like Justin Dillon, former Galaxy Academy player, as I think you mentioned, Matt, who, you know, really haven't gotten much play for this team, and where they slot in and how well they do is a really good question. We talked before the podcast about, who would even be able to play left back. And I think Saad Abdul Salam or Leerdam is probably, the best candidate, but, I don't really know the answer to that. Their regular, starting, left back is, Smith, who plays for Australia and will be away with them. Brad Smith, I think it is. So, so yeah, it's a really interesting lineup, but it is kind of critical for Seattle. I don't think it's that critical. I mean, they're in second place. There is, like you said, a really short drop between second and eighth. Right now, Seattle on 46 points. They could lose three games. Portland Timbers could win three games, and they could find themselves in eighth or ninth place.
It's 6 points between who's the second seed behind LAFC, who's running away with the supporters shield, and then it's just 6 points down to being under the red line. So I mean, this is you know, for the Sporting Kansas Cities, the Real Salt Lakes, the San Jose Earthquakes, it's just those fans, Mark, it's just been an absolute roller coaster where, like, there's no point in watching the live standings because it's almost gaslighting, because your team scores the goal and then goes up and everything, and by the end of the weekend things shift out. Like, I can't imagine what Minnesota United fans have been just pulling their hair out between their sixth and then their second, and then they lose Open Cup, and then they beat LAFC. You know, it is a, you know, it's a crushed soda can in terms of just one little thing going wrong or right can completely flip you from hosting a home playoff game to be completely out. You know, there's, you know, if Kansas City ends up making a run, and even if they don't, Mark, there's seven really good teams who are competing for six spots in the Western Conference. One really good team is going to be really disappointed to not be in the playoffs at the end of the day. And like, that could be Seattle, that could be the LA Galaxy, and both teams need to go in here and need to come into DSG Park expecting and wanting a result. I don't know how Seattle does it given what you were talking about from the roster standpoint, Mark. You know, I On paper, I like their back line, but, you know, our good friend over at MLSsoccer.com, Lily Aringwall, had a really good tweet after the Sounders lost a game a couple weeks ago, and he said, you know, I can sum up the troubles that the Sounders have had the last 2 months defensively in three simple words. Chad Marshall retired. Kim Keehee is a serviceable player. Ramon Torres is, you know, a far cry from the player who was at the World Cup with Costa Rica, I believe, and then obviously was a big part of that MLS Cup win for the Sounders. You know, this is a slow back line. This is a back line that is good overall in the air, but if Jonathan Lewis is playing centrally, if Andre Shinyashiki is able to get any space, especially like the 75th minute after these guys have had to deal with Altatune and everything, I like the Rapids' chances against the center backs. Maybe not the wide players, just because Kevin Leerdam's a fantastic player and Saad Abdul-Salam has been serviceable for them. But I mean, other than Nico Ladero, I'm not sure how much bite I see in the Sounders attack at all, just given Jordan Morris is going to be missing. You don't have Roldan making any other runs out of the midfield. You know, there's no late arrival that I'm really scared about. And from a physicality standpoint, you know, I'm not, you know, assuming that competent Tommy Smith shows up on Saturday, I'm not really scared about what Will Bruin's going to be doing against him. I think it's entirely what's happening from a space standpoint and what's Jack Price doing to make Nico Lodero work for any of the chances they have, and maybe do they get any chances on set pieces. But just given all the rotation that I think is going to have to happen for the Seattle Sounders, I definitely like the Rapids to get a result in here. The one thing that maybe we haven't talked about, Mark, is the Rapids are going to be missing a couple of players as well. Kai Kamara, obviously going to be missing with the Sierra Leone national team. You know, he and the Federation, you know, kissed and made up on that front, so he'll be participating with them, trying with World Cup qualifying. Not that matters right now, but Abdul Gwatubaye is also going to be missing. He's been with the Switchbacks. He's with Rwanda for World Cup qualifying as well. And the Rapids will be a little bit shorthanded elsewhere. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, but then you also have Diego Rubio, who'll be with Chile. And then Cole Bassett and Seba Anderson have both been called up for their respective youth national team roles as well. So do we see a Keegan Rosenberry slide out to the right wing back position? Does that give an opportunity for a Kofi Opare or an Axel Schuberg in the middle from a center back standpoint? Or does Robin Fraser rotate the change of the team from a shape standpoint to account for that? And then no Cole Bassett, I have to assume that means then maybe Nicolas Mesquita gets a start in this game, Mark, him playing in Vancouver Whitecaps and being familiar with the Cascadia rivalry is probably going to be a little bit more familiar with Nico Lodero and some of the other players, you know, that maybe the Rapids have never actually seen before, but maybe Nico Lodero's watched a bunch of film or played them in in some other game to where he's just a little bit more familiar with that team. So the Rapids are going to have to deal with their own rotation as well, but I think just with everything that you have going on, just with the Sounders attack not having a whole lot of bite outside of Lodero and some very questionable speed from the center backs, you know, someone who's fast on the Rapids is going to be on the field on Saturday, and I like their chances in the 75th minute against the Seattle Sounders' likely center backs.
Yeah, I think you said it well. I think the one other player who might get on the field for Colorado who hasn't seen a lot of time lately is Dylan Serna. Seeing him slide out at left fullback might be a nice thing. He really, you know, cratered pretty hard early in the season at that position after having two good games. He had two horrendous games at left back where he just got skinned over and over again. But, you know, maybe it's his time again. It's hard to figure out what's going on with Serna since he's really, you know, it's almost an annual thing, which is Dylan Serna's disappearance in the middle of the season, followed by his getting a little bit of garbage time at the end of the year. So that's one possibility. Another thing I wanted to bring up is I think you brought up, you mentioned Nicolas Mesquita likely getting the start with Diego Rubio off in Chile. I think that's a really good shout. I think that's the obvious decision to make. The other option there is to go Shinyashiki. And to have him kind of play and maybe tuck in more, and maybe the formation will be different than what we saw last time. I want to point out like a raw production point on Nicolas Mesquita. As much as it's goofy and maybe not a great predictor of things, it's better than nothing. MLS Fantasy does a great job of taking all the statistics that a player could possibly contribute to a team and aggregating them into some simple metrics. And like the most simple metric that they make is a player's value, right? Like how much would it cost to buy that player on the open market? Diego Rubio costs $10 million.
He scored a bunch of goals recently. That makes sense based on how strikers are priced. If Carlos Vela is $15.5 million, then I think an informed Diego Rubio with a good matchup could be worth $10
million. Any idea how much Nicholas Mesquita costs?
I'm just going to assume based on how they do the evaluation and just how much players are playing, Mark, I wouldn't say Mesquita is worth more than $6 million. And that's, you know, a player who's worth $6 million in MLS Fantasy, folks, is probably not a starter as a midfielder.
Wow. Think again, Matt. He's worth $4.3 million.
Wow.
Yeah, let me list other Rapids players who cost more. Sam Rabin at $4.5 million, who hasn't played a single minute for the senior team. Courtney Ford at $4.5 million,
out for the season,
injured all season. Kofi Opare, who's worth $4.5 million, who's been terrible in the three games that he's played. Declan Wynn, who's also out injured at $4.5 million. Are we seeing a trend here? The only other players worth less than Nicholas Mesquita, the only players, since I mentioned a number of players who are worth more, Matt Hundley, Andre Rawls, Ratu Baye, and Seb Anderson, and Clint Irwin, all of whom have been basically either have not played a minute for the Rapids or have been replacement-level players.
In MLS Fantasy this year's folks, there's a lower bound. Players, for the most part, you see it a little bit when like a bench player plays 5 minutes and then gets a red card into the game, but there's pretty much a lower bound that you can't cost less than $4 million. So if you're just looking for a guy to stash on your bench and use your money elsewhere, find that third backup goalkeeper who has no chance of playing over Sean Johnson at NYCFC, and he's worth more million dollars. So you said Mesquita's worth what, 4.6, Mark?
Yeah, 4.3.
Like,
so I just
like
want to
there's
explain
nowhere,
why
like,
that
he's
is.
At 4.3 and rock bottom is $4 million. That's the what does yeah. that say about how MLS Fantasy values him?
Yeah, I just want to explain that, which is basically that he had one big game in week 16 against the Vancouver Whitecaps where he turned in a fantastic game, provided two assists, and helped the Rapids to have a big result that night. And then he just absolutely cratered, playing as a sub in basically the next whole bunch of games, and didn't really get a start ever again. So that means he went, it looks like here, 9 games in a row without a single without a start and coming on as a sub and doing effectively nothing. So that doesn't mean that he's not valuable, but it means that he hasn't rated for a long time. And there's something going on. Maybe it was Connor Casey didn't favor him. Maybe he's just not playing very well, or maybe he hasn't gotten a chance. So I just want to throw that out there that putting on Mesquita as your sub is a big question mark right now. We don't know whether Mesquita is worthwhile or not.
Well said, Mark. I guess with that, let's move on to the Rapids Wednesday game that they'll be having. A week from tonight as we're recording, they'll be taking on the Los Angeles Galaxy. I don't have my note in front of me. I believe it's a 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time start. So, you know, a nice midweek game for the Rapids. They, of course, have, you know, the impeccable and the highly quotable Zlatan Ibrahimovic, you know, the lion and the god himself. You know, Colorado Rapids, welcome to Zlatan. Christian Pavone, you know, they acquired, you know, under, for some people, particularly Paul Tenorio, dubious circumstances right at the end of the secondary transfer window. officially a TAM player, and he's been playing mostly on the left side in a 4-2-3-1, kind of morphs sometimes into a 4-3-3 as well. Fabio Alvarez is their main midfielder that they have in the center of the park, Mark, and he's been working mostly with Jonathan Dos Santos, who's had an absolute resurgence since his older brother left the club, and Sebastian Legette, and then there was a bit of an injury, and then he got engaged, so Joe Corona's been a super sub in midfield recently, but with 9 days off between the game at Seattle and the game against Colorado, we could see a little bit of shifting of that, especially with Antuna and Jonathan Dos Santos potentially having some tired legs from their time with the Mexican national team. And then the back line's just been an absolute adventure this year, Mark, between yellow cards that put players in bad situations to not commit fouls, red cards that happen because of dog sows, penalties that give up, and David Bingham, who right now, Mark, has the best X goals against to X goals per American Soccer Analysis compared to the average goalkeeper in MLS. David Bingham has saved 10 goals for the LA Galaxy this season. He also has the most shots faced against him this season, backed up mainly with Diego Polenta and Giancarlo Gonzalez, former captain of the Ticos, at center back, and then Jorgen Selvik, who's kind of he's the LA Galaxy's Danny Wilson in a lot of ways. And then Rolf Felcher, on the right side of the field, who is a lot of overlapping and want to send in across. Not a lot of, yeah, I'll track back and actually do some work defensively on the field. This is a team that'll have 9 days off, Mark. This is a team that will have a lot to think about giving. They came back twice against the Seattle Sounders and ultimately weren't able to get a point. That dropped them to bottom of the playoff teams in the Western Conference, and the Portland Timbers have a game in hand. So presumably the Timbers win that game. That'll be a home game over the weekend against Sporting Kansas City, and the LA Galaxy will be out of the playoffs. So the Galaxy absolutely need to win this game this coming Wednesday. And for the most part, the Rapids have been able to get the best of the LA Galaxy when they haven't had Zlatan Ibrahimovic. This is a team that is going to come in, that is going to desperately need to respond from that loss against Seattle. And Zlatan Ibrahimovic is absolutely going to want to dunk on whichever, he will perceive them as pleb mortals wearing burgundy at the back line. For the Colorado Rapids, what do you see in this game, particularly given that the Rapids will be on short rest?
You know more about the Galaxy than almost anybody I know. I love Pavone and I love Zlatan when he shows up. I think that's one big factor that we could talk ad nauseum about, but every other MLS podcast has made this point ad nauseum as well, which is Zlatan shows up when he shows up. So you don't know whether he's going to go off against Colorado because he's decided that's a big game for him, or whether he's taking
like
the day
off.
Are
the Rapids beneath him because they're not a playoff team in his mind?
On the plus side, it's not a turf field. On the downside, and this is an important thing to note, we will all be able to see the lines from where Fish had their stage, because the week after Labor Day is always the week after the Fish concert, and the turf takes a pretty good beating. So they may have that may be a challenge for the grounds crew. The thing I was going to say was, we are entering the common theme between Seattle and LA is this: we're entering the phase of the season, which unfortunately happens a lot to the Rapids the last couple of years, where other teams need to do something to make it into the playoffs, and they needed to do it against the Rapids. And so that's what LA is going to be coming in. They're right on the playoff red line. They very much need, although realistically, like you said, everyone 2 through 8 is right at the line. So they need to show up. So does Seattle. So do really all their opponents, except for the Rapids' final opponent, LAFC, who are just going to be trying to dunk on them in order to make history. So what that means is each of these games is almost taken out of context of formation, tactics, and players. It becomes a moment of how bad do those guys want it versus the Colorado Rapids players, who are still – they all play great soccer because they want to play great soccer, but can they really dial it up another notch against a team that's trying to make the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, Rapids players individually might be fighting for their lives in terms of a 2020 contract with the Rapids or elsewhere. The LA Galaxy and the Seattle Sounders will be actively fighting for their playoff lives. The Seattle Sounders currently with the, you know, longest, consecutive playoff run, you know, with the, it was 10 years last year, I believe, so they're trying to go for an 11th. And obviously, you know, the LA Galaxy were in a position to qualify for the playoffs last year, Mark, on decision day. I think 20 minutes into the game, Ola Kamara had a brace against the Houston Dynamo, who were already eliminated. They were up 2-0, and in a matter of 20 minutes, they managed to completely throw that all away and lose that game 3-2. For as much as Zlatan Ibrahimovic has liked to criticize the league for its structure, for the playoff structure, the fact that there isn't pressure in every single game. The reality is, you know, like, you know, if Zlatan Ibrahimovic and the LA Galaxy were in a similar position to the Premier League, like, they're Crystal Palace right now. They're mid-table. They're not winning anything. They were knocked out of, you know, their cup game, you know, 2-3 games in, you know, like, they're cruising at this point. They know they're not going to get relegated. They have no chance of making Europa League or anything. Like, there's no point in actually trying. You know, as much as Zlatan wants to criticize the league and its structure and all the hokey aspects that he thinks are a joke compared to the major European leagues he's competed in, the only hope for the Galaxy to win a trophy this year is to make the playoffs, and that requires the playoff structure being there, and that's going to require them probably have to win a couple road games. That could include a playoff El Tráfico that's going to be absolutely lit, and they're going to have to go through probably the best team in MLS history, and that could probably involve a road game against an Eastern Conference power, Philadelphia Union or an Atlanta United, for example, you know, assuming that they even get there at this point. So this is a game that Seattle Sounders, I think, are probably going to do some rotation, and maybe Brian Smetzer experiments a little bit and, you know, just tries to hope for a draw and be happy with it given the circumstances. You know, I think they would have dunked on Anthony Hudson, you know, back in April if the bomb cyclone didn't happen. And this was a game that, given that the LA Galaxy are going to have 9 days off and they're going to have a lot of time to stew about the defensive mistakes, that I think they're going to come in here and they're going to have to be extremely focused. This is going to have to be the version of Ibrahimovic that thinks, I'm going to go out there and get a hat trick, so no matter what version of our defense shows up, we walk away with 3 points. I think you're going to see that similarly from Pavone, who's been a secondary scoring option, and, you know, maybe Legette tries to be a little bit more focused, or Joe Corona, given that, you know, maybe Jonathan Dos Santos isn't 90 minutes fit with this team. Maybe the one other variable that's worth thinking about, Mark, Guillermo Barros-Skelotto, head coach for the LA Galaxy in his first year, kind of alluded in post-game availability on Sunday after the Sounders game that Romano Alessandrini, who I believe had a torn hamstring back in March or April, had to have major surgery and was expected to be back mid-September, is expected to return to training with the team next week. What that means in terms of his availability, is he even going to be fit? Is he even going to be available for selection? Is he even going to travel with the team or stay, you know, in Southern California and continue to work on his rehab? But that's maybe something else for, you know, Rapids fans to maybe check late this week, and then maybe probably check on Tuesday to see what, you know, the Kevin Baxters, the corner of the Galaxies, the LA Galaxy confidentials are saying, whether or not that's something to consider. Doubt he starts for the game, but could he be on the bench and maybe available for 10 to 15 minutes possibly? Alessandrini had the goal against the Rapids when they played at DSG Park in 2018. So that's something else to consider. Once they actually get healthy, Mark, I think a front three of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Christian Pavone, and, you know, Roman Alessandrini is, you know, right up there with, for me, probably everybody other than, you know, LAFC, pending the health of Carlos Vela's hamstring. All right, Mark, shall we get out of here?
I think we've talked way too much about
soccer. All right,
soccer
one little thing that I do want to say, folks. I will have the pleasure of speaking with Lino De Rosa tomorrow afternoon, Mark. So that will be a special interview pod that I'll be dropping hopefully on Friday ahead of Lino traveling from Italy to Colorado. We'll talk about his journey and some of the detail behind that, and maybe you'll get a little bit of his backstory, folks, hopefully before meeting him in person and getting to welcome him into the Rapids community for what is hopefully a result for them, for the Rapids, for you, and for Lino on Saturday against the Rave Green. But in any case, listeners, follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard. Check out our written work respectively at, what is it again, Mark? I can never remember.
Don't worry about
it. Wherever it is that Mark writes about his crappy soccer stuff and last word on soccer. For me, follow us on Twitter as a podcast, at Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHO. We did get two questions last week. I'll respond to one via Twitter, and then the big one that we got from Mr. Foster, Professor Foster, Mark, we'll probably address in our first off-season pod as we look towards the January transfer window. But as I said, send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHO. If you want to get in touch or have something that's longer than 280 characters, rapids96podcast@gmail.com, patreon.com/rapids96podcast if we bring monetary value to our lives, and denverpost.com/HTHL, all letters, all lowercase. With that, listeners, we'll see you next week after hopefully seeing the Robin Fraser train roll on against the Seattle Sounders and the Galacticos. We'll see you then.